Okay, good morning. Welcome, everyone. It is Thursday, February 7th, and we are ready for another installment of the Emunah Teleconference Teleforum. And welcome. So we're going to get started with our brief review about what is this call about, and then we're going to be speaking about the peculiar idea of the title of being a kofer b'avodah zarah, one who repudiates or denies of idolatry. So this call is about a simple truth that underlies all mental psychological experience, and specifically how an understanding of emunah, of the Jewish understanding of belief in God, as well as the obligation to know there are no other powers than God, are directly relevant to navigating and understanding and navigating our psychological experience, and ultimately how our psychological experience becomes a wondrous way to see and experience the truth behind all of life, the reality of our Creator. So what that means to say is that this is how I understand it. We're having an ongoing experience, moment to moment, of divine energy. Everything is divine energy. There is nothing that is not divine energy, moment to moment to moment. The tables, the trees, are all sustained moment to moment because of divine energy. It's not like the moment now that the tree is standing is somehow independent, and therefore the following moment it's standing. It's because every single precise moment there is a renewal of divine energy that is allowing for and animating everything in existence. And that's not just true for trees and tables and the molecules that make up those things. It's also true for my experience. Not only the body that I'm occupying, but the experience of my mental life, my psychological life, because there's this flow of divine energy that's showing up inside my heart moment to moment to moment. And I have the ability to feel that divine energy. I have the ability to feel divine energy showing up in my heart. And it feels like a real sensation. You know, it's a beautiful and rich experience of divine energy. And that divine energy flows in a variety of ways, as our Torah points to the metaphor of the heart, that just as the heart is pumping at all times, not through my making, not through my I'm not the one pumping my heart and directing the flow of blood through my system. Rather, it's God that's pumping my heart, and He's pumping it with these two distinct hearts. One that flows with nourishing, enriching, oxygenated blood, and one that flows with toxin-filled blood. And it's at all times. It's part of the normal, healthy functioning of a human being. So too, my spiritual heart. There's a portal of consciousness through which God is continuously, moment to moment, pumping this divine energy through my consciousness, through the spiritual heart that animates my psychological experience. So I'm having a psychological experience moment to moment that is an experience of divine energy. I'm getting hits of divine energy moment to moment. Now, what's fascinating is that because of how it looks and feels, which we're going to speak a little bit about in a moment, the feelings I get, it's kind of normal to look around and associate those feelings with things in the world, things about myself, which are also things in the world, right? It's to associate a feeling with a person is a thing in the world, or an event, that's a thing in the world, but also to associate a feeling with a thing about me. In other words, to come to a conclusion that I have a certain problematic, I have a fundamental flaw. It doesn't mean that there aren't such things as, you know, obviously there's such things as well, let's just pause there. It's possible that a person could associate his emotional experience with aspects of his identity or his past. And then he becomes kind of invested in, there's a thing from my past, there's a thing about my nature that is real and that's causing, that's sourcing my experience. If I wasn't, you know, so flawed, or if I wasn't so troubled, then I wouldn't feel this way. How am I going to deal? Right? All of that is a misunderstanding, because the truth is that I'm having an experience of divine energy that's showing up in this moment. And what happens? I misunderstand what's true about that feeling experience, rather than see with clarity that it's attributed to divine energy in this moment. I link it to something in the world, and then just kind of innocently and logically, based on that mistaken premise, I go about trying to resist or manage or change that thing in the world. It might be my spouse, it might be my child, it might be my work environment, it might be myself. And to the extent that I attempt to manage, resist, or run away from something in this world, I'm participating in an illusion. And unfortunately, it doesn't generally lead to relief. It leads to a deepening. That the very act of attending to that feeling by managing, running, or fixing it, attempting to, it only adds kind of a certain gravity to that feeling, so that the experience I'm having of it only becomes greater. In a way that a person goes, so he is assisted by God. And so when we look in the direction of our mistaken perception, when we look in the direction of a misunderstanding that something out there in the world is sourcing my experience, so then that experience gets richer, becomes more meaningful to me. So what this call is about is how that works. Just learning about how our psychological experience is unfolding as an extension of divine energy moment to moment to moment, and how there's a tremendous, tremendous value to having this conversation. To me, this is the mitzvah, the continual commandment that we are given an opportunity to look at and consider and explore, the constant commandment of Emunah, identifying how the Creator is in a relationship with us. He's interacting with us. He's engaging with us through this most intimate of experiences called the divine energy that's showing up inside my heart and that I'm having a feeling experience of. And that simultaneously there's this commandment called not to attribute powers to things other than God, that I have a continual opportunity to serve and to acknowledge and to stand in that truth, that even as compelling as it looks and feels that it's my experience is coming from something out there, that in fact it's really just divine energy. And that's powerful. That's a very powerful thing, because that simple truth allows us to step even a slight degree away from the illogic of the entanglement of our dependence on this world, that there's something other than the single Creator, right? The truth of the Creator is real whether we see it or not. The truth of our experience being created in this moment through divine energy is real whether we see it or not. As we stay loyal to that truth, we allow ourselves, first of all, to accomplish something wonderful called these constant commandments. And second, we navigate our lives in a different way. We disentangle from the falsehood, and we allow our nature, we stop working at odds with our nature. This beautiful wisdom, this GPS, every one of us has this profound GPS that's designed by God. It's not dependent on our smarts. It's not dependent on our hard work. it's present inside of us, and we can awaken and come to respect and have tremendous appreciation for that divine connection that can never leave us. It can get obscured through our innocent misunderstanding, but it never leaves. And we, of course, in any moment can become more in tune with that. So that's the nature of this call. And today I'm fascinated by a statement in the Talmud that describes that Mordechai HaTzadik was identified. He's called Mordechai HaYehudi, Mordechai the Jew, or the one from Yehuda. But the Talmud is kind of perplexed because Mordechai is not from the tribe of Yehuda. So why is he called the Yehudi? And the answer the Talmud gives is he was from the tribe of Benjamin. And so why is he called Mordechai HaYehudi? Because the Talmud says, anyone who is a kofer, b'avodah zorah, anyone who is a repudiator, a denier of idolatry, earns the title Yehudi, which, by the way, Yehudi is associated with the word lehodot, to admit, to acknowledge. So his admission, it kind of goes hand in hand. Admission of the Creator involves denial of avodah zorah, praise to an acknowledgement of the Creator, like hodah, is synonymous with denial of idolatry. But here's the thing. It strikes me as funny language. Normally, when we use the word kofer is a very strong word, right? To actively repudiate. Usually, we associate the word kofer, to repudiate, with something real, right? That's why there's an expression in Jewish language called kofer be'ikr. God forbid a person, you know, by virtue of certain beliefs or actions, can be designated a denier of the essential truth of the Creator. That's normally what we associate the word kofer with, because there's something there to deny, because it's real, and yet you're denying something real. So for the Talmud to use the word kofer b'avodah zorah, it's weird to me. You know, it struck me as strange. And now I think that this conversation about Inside Out, to me, reveals something very fascinating. And in particular, with this whole story of Purim that we're coming up to in a number of weeks. Why? What was unique and interesting about the Purim story? Well, the Purim story, we know, was the transition of the Jewish people from an era of God's revealed presence. The first temple was an era in which there were 10 daily miracles that were performed in the temple, like open miracles, totally visibly against the nature. These miracles were daily. And there was an era of prophecy in which human beings experienced an explicit and obvious intervention of divine communication. And in general, there was, a whole kind of, like, there was a tremendous spiritual nature to experience of life. And then, with the destruction of the temple, it ushered in kind of the loss of those open miracles and the loss of the open prophetic experience. And the Jewish people were in exile. And they encountered almost kind of like a new playing field, like a new experience of life was being ushered in. And Mordechai and the Jewish people were being confronted by a test, by a nisayon that was new. It was the nisayon of living in a world in which God's presence is hidden. It went from revealed, God's presence, to nistar, to hidden. And that is the trappings of the Purim story, is that in the exile experience, it wasn't obvious to them the way God's presence was revealed. And of course, we know that the whole story of the Purim, the whole story of the Scroll of Esther, there's never a point where God's name is actually recorded. It was an era in which overt experience of God as the center was kind of missing. And so what fills the place? And that's the world we live in today. Our sages tell us that Purim, learning about Purim and understanding the story of Purim and reliving the story of Purim and its commandments that are still relevant today, is an exercise in learning how to be with God, how to see God, how to relate to God in a world of Hester. And one of the trappings of the world of Hester, of God's hiddenness, is that Avodah Zorah feels a lot more compelling. Why is it appropriate that the Talmud referred to Mordechai as a kofar b'Avodah Zorah, where normally kofar is associated with something real? Because Avodah Zorah, the perception of some alternative to God, took on new substance. It took on a new level of compelling perception. And guess what? That's the world that you and I are living in today. The story of Purim is our lifeline to an appreciation of how to navigate Hester. And again, the trappings of that world of Hester is that Avodah Zorah, the perception of there being something other than God, is a lot more pronounced. And that's why I struggle with such recurring experiences of associating my psychological experience with all the various things of this world. I struggle mightily with the sense that my emotional experience, my mental psychological life, is really, really being created and pushed on and pressed on by the people in my life, by the circumstances of my life, by what looks and feels to me to be the fixed aspects of my personality or my past. It looks and feels really compelling to me. And Mordechai was the hero of the story because he could stand in that perception, right? He could feel the compelling, that's the playing field, the playing field of a world in which God's presence is less revealed, is that the perception of alternative powers is a lot more compelling feeling. And that's why it's appropriate to refer to Mordechai as the denier, the repudiator of alternative powers, because he felt it. I mean, that's my understanding, right? He was the hero of the story because he taught us how to stand in a world in which his entire generation felt so compelled by all these pressures, by the pressure to fit in with the society and to make, you know, good with the king and the king's request to go to the feast, and how dare we not listen to him because that's not politically expedient, and how dare we not bow to Haman because he's the second in command, and how dare we, you know, not listen to and be compelled by all these kind of powers out there. How dare we? And Mordechai stood in that. Do I believe that he felt and perceived there to be pressures and compelling alternatives to the single source and the single truth? It seems to me he wouldn't earn the title of kofar unless he also felt and experienced the compelling nature of these alternative powers. And he taught us. His example is an example for us of that reality, that we're living in a world of Hester, where God's presence is not revealed in the way that it once was, and it looks just that much more compelling. Now, I'll share with you just a couple conversations that I'm in the midst of with some folks who are struggling, and I'm the first to acknowledge that in my way, I'm also struggling. So there's a couple of folks that I'm in conversation with, one of whom I've mentioned is struggling with an addiction to e-cigarettes for several years. And when we get to the root of what it is that he's bothered by, is that there's this dull but ever-present sense of dissatisfaction that he just, there's this feeling of unfulfilled, of bad, of yucky, And he associates it with there's something wrong. There's something wrong. There's something wrong. What's wrong? I'm not fulfilling my potential. I'm not stepping into, I'm not doing, I'm not acting, I'm not. And in the presence of that yucky feeling, of course, it makes sense that he wants to seek some relief. But the underlying issue is that he's got this dull but never ceasing feeling of yuck. And he's looking around. Where is it coming from? It's coming from my I'm not fulfilling my potential. I'm not taking action. I'm not motivated. I'm not. All it comes down to is that he's got a feeling that he doesn't like. And now he is hanging it on a conclusion that says there's something wrong with me. And based on that, of course, he seeks relief from that feeling. But really, there's nothing to it, right? All it is just what I'm seeing, and this is not, you know, this is something that's normal to struggle with. It's just the divine energy of there being. There's just the divine energy of Yetzirah, of the confusion. There's something wrong. There's something wrong with you. You're not this. You're not that. It's just this kind of background noise. That is, now he's come to believe that it's something, it's pointing to something in this world. It's pointing to a true flaw in him. It's pointing to the truth of his lack of living his life to his potential. There's all this evidence to him, that feeling is evidence to him of there being something in this world that's real, that's really causative of his bad feeling. And so he's in this loop, you know, he's in this loop. And that's, you know, he hasn't seen that yet, or he's glimpsing it, but it's still, you know, bothering him. And it's just the divine energy. Now, another example is a guy who's in an intense experience of anxiety associated with work. And when he steps into certain meetings, it literally, his body becomes, he undergoes like very palpable distress. You know, like it's not just an uncomfortable feeling, like he starts to feel panic, you know. And it's clear to him that there's something really problematic about him, you know. Like there's no way to understand that feeling except to link it to some real deep-seated flaw in him. That's his understanding. And I respect that, because I also have these struggles, that these strong feelings, I'm just looking around for, like, okay, where's that coming from? You know, and I land on something. I land on spouse, child, me. And then I start to get busy with working at and dealing with that. And all I can say to you is that what I'm hearing in the story of Purim and in the title of Mordechai being the repudiator of this misunderstanding of alternative powers is that the presence of this divine energy that shows up as this insecure feeling. That's all it is. It's from God. It challenges us to look in the direction, even as we're in that pain and that insecure feeling, it challenges us to stand in that moment, to acknowledge the truth, and thereby repudiate the perception of an alternative power. And of course, you know, like I always say, there's standing in the truth, and there's affirming that truth. There's also the beautiful opportunity of prayer. To me, prayer is so powerful that, you know, that rather than look and get caught up in there's something wrong and what am I going to do and where am I going to go to fix myself, I acknowledge, God, there's no other source to my experience than you, and I need your help. And that's the design of the creation. As I like to remind us, the Midrash says there is nothing sought by God except to hear the prayers of the Jewish people. It is by design that there are things that we are missing in this world. It's by design that we encounter moments and circumstances of distress. when we acknowledge the truth behind that distress, it allows us to really kind of let go and talk, you know, and ask for help. So to me, this is a powerful thing. This is kind of a very powerful, validating kind of recognition that the hero of the Jewish people in the Purim story was one who felt an extraordinary inclination to other powers, to associating life and the reality of life with alternative powers, and he was a kofer. The kofer indicates that it was there became an elevated perception of alternative powers, and the hero is the one who can stay loyal to this truth. These two beautiful continuous commandments of knowing that we're in a relationship with God and that's what our experience is, and simultaneously the truth that there's nothing other than God, you know, to affirm the illusion of the alternative, even as we're not in control of how that perception is showing up inside of us. Okay, that's my thing, and I am interested now in hearing from you guys, so I'm going to unmute you. If you need to mute yourself, you can do so, and then we'll go from there. Good morning. How are you all?
We're unmuted. I can comment if nobody else wants to say anything. I can make a comment on what you were saying.
Please.
Okay. If somebody else has a question, it's not, you know what I mean? I'd rather them. I find that I think for me it's helpful to acknowledge this part, and I feel like also when I speak to people it is helpful. But, you know, if you have a headache, that's not something that we would think of, oh, we did something wrong. Because, like, in this, for whatever reason, we're brought up to realize the physical maladies are not our fault. And on a certain level, the emotional ones, we're kind of given a little blame. But at the same time, when I have a headache, it's a harder day. Because I'm in pain, and my head hurts, and I can't, it's a harder day. It's harder to do my routine. It's harder to cook dinner. It's harder to get to the supermarket, because my head hurts. And I feel like also when my emotional head hurts, it's also a harder day. And I feel like we need to acknowledge that there's truth in that. It is a harder day. If I'm tired today, it's a harder day. And I have to be much more conscious of not yelling at my kids or not being short with my husband or with myself, because you are more prone to the unhelpful thinking when you're emotionally or physically not up to par, right? Mm-hmm. And I find that it's helpful for people to understand that you're not superwoman or man, and it gives yourself the break to understand that, yes, you do have to be a little bit more on top of yourself not to lose it, like not to scream or not to be short, but that day it's going to be harder and you might lose a few. You know what I mean? Just Hashem gave you that day, and it is a harder day, and, you know, I don't love those days. I complain a lot to Hashem when I have those days. But, you know, I feel like we always have to take a little bit of pressure off ourselves to be perfect on a day like that.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. You know, it's absolutely true that there is a gaining an acceptance of our humanity, you know, that includes a compassion, you know, a compassion for our humanity. Definitely.
And sometimes I'll even just warn everybody. I'm like, I'm really not having a great day. Like, bear with me, because I'm, you know, it's not the right day to ask me for stuff, because I'm not going to be able to say yes, you know. But sometimes even to humble yourself a little bit to be able to even tell the family, like, I'm not perfect. I'm really having a hard day. And, you know, kind of talk to me at your own risk, you know.
That's funny. Yep, I hear that.
Yeah.
Would anyone else like to share, or you know, something that they're seeing, or something that they're wondering about?
I have a question.
Yeah.
Can you hear me clearly?
I can.
Okay. I sent the email. I'm not sure if you saw it at the last minute. I don't even have the question clear, but I know I just keep on having the question. And I'm not sure if it's really a question or maybe I'm just feeling foolish about it, but I'm trying to understand about feelings. And I know Mrs. Krumholz said a while back, oh, we love our feelings. Like, I wouldn't want to have a, you know, life without all those feelings. And I was thinking I can do quite well without some of them. But to give more of an example, like, let's say, for example, yesterday I had a, I have many examples, of course, but I had this session with a coach yesterday, and it was highly emotional, and it has been over the last 2 weeks ongoing about this. It was very emotional about things which are very personal and deep, and maybe there was great validation in it, great hope of change, which has been happening. And I was in a very emotional state because it's also very personal. I'm sharing it, but it was very good that I was sharing it and conclusions we're having. But there could be examples that are less personal, but just deep. Usually I'm talking about negative emotions, sadness. I think when I'm asking this question, it's about more being sadness and upset. And so afterwards, I'm in this deep emotional state, and I've seen so much of the principles that I know that I'm not going to be in this state about this issue, maybe in a few hours or very soon or tomorrow. But on the other hand, at that moment, it was like, first of all, I was supposed to meet a friend. I was like, I can't meet a friend now. I wouldn't be relevant. I'm in this place of where, in a way, I think maybe even want to be. Maybe I want to cry. Maybe I want to, you know, think a lot about it. And trying to make it short, it just feels like afterwards, or even at that moment, like, isn't this all a waste? Because so what happened was I ended up going to my principal class in Borough Park, and of course my thinking started to shift, and I just never got back to that same place. It's a very important thing. We're going to continue to speak about it, but I'm not in that place anymore, and even the idea of crying or being part of that whole deep drama is not even important anymore. And maybe at that point I would have wanted to call somebody and talk or tell my husband about it. And so I get this kind of thinking, which is that, and it just be for her to think that, like, what a waste. Like, what's all that for? Like, why not somehow, assume that I somehow have the control, someone will gift me with that I can make certain choices where I can just move on. Like, what's the point of all that feeling? It feels like, so when I ask it historically, I'm asking, like, oh, what does Hashem want me to be? Because I sound very, like, I'm trying to get into whatever Hashem wants. But I think really maybe my real question is that I just feel so, like, such a waste.
Let me just make sure I'm understanding what you're saying. You're saying you went through, you know, a really warm and hopeful experience, and then you had, like, but you also have these kind of intense drama, sad feelings, even as you know that they're not going to last, and in fact that's what happened, it passed. It's still like, it's still kind of a question in your mind, like, what's the point of going through that intense drama that can be so unsettling and disruptive? Like, what does God want with that drama flow?
Right. I mean, I could just keep it as a God question, even though I think deep down, I think there's more personal reasons why I'm asking it, but it's really, that's a valid question also. But it's like in other cases too, like where, you know, in relationship issues where all of a sudden, like, you know, with, or even with parenting, with it's a lot of, so many, you know, in parenting, we're having a difficult time with a child, and it's very hard. And afterwards, I want to go tell whoever it was, what a hard day I had. It was so difficult. Now, I know with the help of the principles, it's been a huge difference. I don't have to sit there and be so, I don't have to, when I'm in the pain, I can get out much easily. I can move on much faster. But, yeah, I still want to sometimes go to, you know, whoever and say, you know how hard that was? That was a really hard day, and talk all about it. And I want to go do that. And then sometimes I wonder, like, what for? Like, I can get back to my peaceful, happy state so much quicker. It really is a better place to be, you know. Now we're dealing with the shidduch, and it's really, you know, difficult. There's just some snags in it, and like again, everything goes. Or relationship is the big one, which is like there's a lot of drama around it. because it really is. It's like a lot of difficulty for X amount of time, and now things are better, and all these emotions which I'm busy with. And again, I go back to sometimes, like, and then I go back into my, you know, what I call an Shema state, home-based feeling, and which is now I know so deeply is available all the time. Like, you know, an hour later, I could just be, like, so happy sweeping the floor, doing laundry, and I'm back to where Hashem's our innate health, which is, like, I've seen again and again, is always available. It has nothing to do with all the drama that's going on. And when I see that, and I'm sitting there in a very simple state of doing some laundry, folding a undershirt, I wonder, what was all that for? Where does it have a place?
Yeah, yeah. Right. Like, I mean, on a certain level, it sounds like you're asking kind of like, why do I need to take these Yetzirah rides? You know, like, I get this hit of divine energy that is, you know, the Gemara says that Hashem is Mechadish, the Yetzirah, every moment, right? And that's the kind of ride I get. I get these rides of, you know, intense insecurity and fear and sad or whatever it is. And then I come down from it and I'm grateful. But it's like, okay, well, why? Like, why all that drama?
Right, and just like, asking the question makes sound like it's based on the fallacy, because after everything you've been talking about this week, where we don't always have the control, that I get. So this question would seem like irrelevant, like, because we don't have that control. But I'm talking in the case, many times I feel like we do have, Hashem gifts us with an amount of free will where, yes, I could do certain things where I know I could not go call somebody up and get all into it. I do believe, and I think it's aligned with what you're saying, but we do have, you know, the control to do certain things that would get us back faster. And I do see that, like, Hashem is, I learned from Rav Astrov, I don't know if you're not familiar with him, but where this is being sent from Hashem, the situations are being sent by Hashem for us to, for, like, he presented kind of, and I find it aligned with the principles, where we're at a crossroads to see, like, to realize that it's Hashem sending the thinking, and Hashem is waiting for us to see that, see through the misunderstanding, and make whatever choices we could see. And so therefore, I could see that it's being sent from Hashem, but I guess it's to the extent that I have a choice, I feel like there's something I could be doing. So what should I be doing?
Okay, well, that's new to me. That sounds like a new... I first heard you wonder about, like, why is the drama necessary if in any case I'm going to, I trust that I'm going to, you know, find my way back to equilibrium, but, like, what's the point with all the drama? That was the first question I heard, and then just now I'm hearing something slightly different, which is, in that drama state, what's kind of appropriate to do?
Well, I think it's really the same question. Where I'm seeing it as that I'm wondering where do I go? Because I feel like there was a choice. So I don't have to sit there and stay in it. And I could just realize, let me quickly do whatever it takes to kind of move on, because this is just such a waste to sit there in that emotion, if there's a choice to it. So, like, and it seems that that's what Hashem is, according to that way of looking at that, Hashem is sending us, but we're supposed to look through the misunderstanding, see the first mitzvah of Hashem is sending this, and it feels like, let's just do what we could to get back to our Neshama state, as if there's no validity, as there's nothing more important than this being a Nisayon to us. And when I'm in it, it feels so much, it feels like there's something really important to it. Like, when I'm in that emotion yesterday, it feels like important, like there's something, I guess it's hard to say the word special when it's painful, but it feels like there's something, is that just part of the whole trick? Like, it feels like there's, like, maybe it's important to stay around there and do that. And that sounds strange when the neshama state, the home-based feeling seems like the best place to be. That makes it more clear and more complicated.
Well, you know, let me speak I'm going to suggest the following. I think you're acknowledging the simple truth that, you know, fundamentally we're here to recognize that we're not in control. You know, we're not the creator. You know, we're the created, and he's the creator, and there's something profound and beautiful about coming to see more deeply that truth, you know, that all of our calculations and all of our preferences and all of our attachment, which is really ego, you know, it's just all of our judgments and perceptions about what could and should, and you know, that's our ego, you know, that's our misunderstanding. And there is the squeezing process, as I view it, is an opportunity to go to a deeper place. You know, there's a contraction, you know. That to me is what it is. It's a contraction. Why does God need there to be contractions for the birth process? Why can't it just be dilations, you know? Like, well, why not just dilations? There's a tikkun going on. You know, there was some, without getting into the whole depth of, you know, what happened at the chait of Adam and Chava, you know, there was obviously some profound mistake of turning towards self rather than God. And now we're in the process of fixing that, of going through a healing process, of a deep tikkun, of coming to see more clearly that the self is not what we want. You know, it's just not where the action, it's not where the gold is. And there's apparently something, there's a healthy shedding process of that illusion, of that deep-held illusion that we have, that, you know, my thinking, my feeling, my take on life is, you know, really, really meaningful. So in that sense, it's painful, but it's precious. You know, those feelings are indicative of this beautiful journey that the Almighty has designated for us. And you will get insights, you know, like you're in the midst of a painful experience, you're in the midst of a drama experience, and then you kind of have an inclination to call somebody and talk about it. But then you get this insight that says, you know, who says that that's going to help? Like, it feels like it might be, I feel a knee-jerk kind of inclination to do that, but who says that I'm not just going to kind of, you know, be prolonging the state? Like, and that might come to you. That's an insight. That's also divine energy. I'm reluctant to apply kind of a rule to what to do in an emotional state other than what I understand, what I think Torah is pointing to, you know, to look to the truth. What do I know about this moment? And that is the beginning of all constructive effort. And from there, new thoughts show, and from there, new insights show that I can rely on. And that's why I quoted the verse the other day that we say in our daily prayers, in the Hodu section, it says, Yismach lev mevakshe Hashem. The heart rejoices of the one who seeks the divine. And the seeking the divine is no less relevant in, you know, my drama feeling as it is in my nice warm feeling. In both cases, that's the recipe for a joyous heart.
As you were talking, I was thinking that it's going a different direction, that there's, I guess, like you say, there's no perfection. Like, okay, I'll pick up the phone to call. You know, I used to call all the time. I used to grab the phone or emails and, like, wanted something to help out. And now I don't most of the time because I understand more, first of all, that it gets me more into it. I know much more of the truth of what's going to happen, that things are going to, you know, right itself. And sometimes I just don't need it as much. But I guess I don't have to see it. Maybe I could just see it as a more human way, that it's not, that sometimes I'm going to need it as part of the way to get back to myself, and that's okay, even though in theory it's a waste if I wasn't human, but this is part of the process of getting back to myself, so maybe that I would be able to see. So that was just one thought that came to me as you were talking. Are you seeing the can you validate that feeling of, like, how it would seemingly seem a waste when one sees deeply the principles and can see how clearly and has experienced so much, the coming back to total peace, to really, really see it. Some people haven't seen it, but to really see that, that even during something really, really difficult, we have access to peaceful feelings, and it happens again and again, so that maybe it's just a trick of the Eter to all of a sudden put a thought in my head to say, but then when I'm in it again, to say, oh, this is so foolish, because I know that happiness exists for me. But maybe that's just a trick to tell me that, but it's not existing for me right now. And yes, it's hard, and this is the process I'm going through. And
right, right. If I understood like what you, if I understood what you just said, it might, you know, there might be a little, you know, niggling voice that says, this pain is not necessary. You know something, and you should be able to just kind of get to peace already, you know? And that, of course, is one of the ways that we can take our inside-out understanding and make it into a thing, you know, as if it's like a thing that I now own. You know, all
what
that we're doing
is... What does that mean, to make it into something, into a thing?
A person gains a bit of understanding about inside-out nature of life, and then he starts to judge himself. Is he doing it? Is he not doing it? He makes it like a skill, and then he starts to worry, you know, am I really holding in that skill? Am I not holding in the skill? And of course, that's making it into some kind of a thing or a resource or a possession. And all it is just a description. All it is just a description, a metaphor for describing kind of the truth that's now, you know? And yeah, you know, that the feeling is this. It's all I can say is that it's kind of, we're just coming back to the reminder that what I wanted to say was that, you know, the Purim story was 12 years. You know, the story of the Megillah took place over 12 years. The revealing of a hidden truth. It wasn't kind of, you know, Mordechai was loyal to the truth all that time, but it was, you know, it wasn't like it showed up, you know. And what I would say is that we're all in the midst of our own Megillah, you know. We're in the midst of it with beautiful perceptions that are showing up, that there's no way to understand there's no way to explain the ways and you know, how we see new things, we recover, we reconnect to our own kind of connection and equilibrium. To me, there's no way to understand that without recognizing the truth of our divine energy, of our connection to the divine. But it's an ongoing process of kind of seeing and losing sight, you know. So you're that's what I see. You know, if there's a niggling doubt, like, why do I need to go through this? That's a sample of misunderstanding.
It's a sample of misunderstanding that I'm not seeing that this is part of the process that's.
I think so. If the question comes up in your mind, like, hey, I've been through this drama and I get back to equilibrium, is why do I need to go through this again?
I don't think it's why I need to, why is Hashem sending any kind of question. It's more like, I guess maybe as you're saying, I'm realizing that I'm feeling like there's a bit of a choice over here. And I'm wondering why I'm not taking it sometimes, and it feels like it maybe, I know it's like, there's a lot of parts to the question, but like let's say I do stay in it. Let's say I decide, you know what, I'm just gonna have a good cry now, and I want it, and maybe there's a certain outlet to that, but so I'll do it. But it's I can't ever do it freely because it feels like what a waste. You're wasting, like, either side from Hashem or side from myself. It just feels like, why are you wasting your time? Or it's not even what Hashem wants, because you know that Neshama's place is available to you. So, like, just do something to move on now, because, like...
What would you do, though?
It's not necessary.
What does that mean, just do something?
Well, you saw what happened yesterday, that as soon as I walked out the door, then I started to talk to people, it passed. So, and other things, you know, when I turn on a class, you know, I'll right away start to get into that. And I don't want to be in suppression and not denial of things. I know it's there, but I'm just also understanding the principle so well that it's not necessary. So it feels like maybe just kind of move yourself on with understanding that, you know, it's not suppressing the feeling. I know it's there. And it's, and naturally, Hashem usually makes a test. So
you want to suggest to yourself that you should do those different, like, you know, you got like a little bit of a toolbox of walk through the door and talk to people is one tool. Go, you know, do some task that might take
your
mind off.
Knowing that it might not be gifted to work that way, which I'm seeing, but from Hashem's point of view or from my point of view, why wouldn't I feel compelled to do that? Because I guess my goal of always being overproductive and I got to do what Hashem wants, I got to move on, it just would seem like not a very good way of spending your time, or it's not spending Hashem, it's with Hashem. But simply, it's just to sit there and, like, be, sound very ego, to sit there and, you know, cry and feel sorry for myself or feel the pain of hope, whatever. Be very busy with my emotions. I'm so busy with myself. This feels like that's the either Hashem question or myself question. It's just like a lot of being into myself and what was all that for? I should be in a different state and I'll be more productive and move on. Like, this is a choice that if Hashem gives me that, I can do that. And why am I staying there?
Well, I'm hearing the word should. And that's a clue to me that you might get a suggestion that says, don't bother with the cry, go talk to somebody right now. But there's a difference between that being a suggestion that comes as a gift versus a toolbox of things to do, you know? And what I'm hearing in your... what I'm hearing underlying what you're describing is there being kind of like doing this feels like a waste, and couldn't I just kind of do something different?
Mm-hmm.
That to me is suggestive that there is a toolbox to employ to change your feeling state. And what we're talking about is the focus on, you know, being a truth seeker rather than a feeling seeker, you know? Like, the truth seeker is the place to go, because that's what's real. You know, I just don't think it's true that your toolbox is a real reliable toolbox. I think that, you know, it's normal that you wake up from your sad feelings, because that's the design of, you know, the flow of energy. But it's not true that it was the walking through the door and talking to people that actually caused that in an absolute sense.
Right.
Something shifted. Your eyes, you took your, you know, somehow your Hashem helped you to look away from the sad feelings and look towards something new. But that was a gift. Now, you mm-hmm. might get an idea that says, why am I bothering, you know, with the calling people and speaking out my troubles? But you can trust that there's only one power source. There's only one way in which these ideas are generated. And you don't have to worry about generating those ideas. That's not your job. Your job is... to start with, you know, the beginning of all wisdom is to know what's true, is to have an understanding of the divine. That's the beginning of all wisdom. Allow yourself to do that job and not worry about what the feeling that experience is showing you in the moment. Because you get the ideas. It sounds like I'm talking to somebody who does get insights about, don't bother with that, go there. It's just that you're wondering how to do them better. I'm not sure, you know, like you're wondering, you're doing great. If you looked at the 12-year course, if you looked at the last 12 years of your life, you know, you'd see that there is a growing and deepening appreciation for a simple truth in your life. You know, there is the wisdom of the, you know, this inside out understanding is showing up in a way that is clear. Any one of us who looks at the 12 years, last 12 years of our life, if we're going to see that, and it's not coming from us, you know, it's not coming from our hard work. that's part of the theme of the Purim story, is the hodah, you know, is that acknowledgement, that gratitude of there being a real gift.
Thank you. I know I heard some truth there. I don't have it yet, but I am on the way. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
It was a pleasure. Thank you for sharing. Does anybody else have a short comment or thing to kind of, I don't know, comment or reflection or... Well, we're entering into now a period of Adar, and Adar is the beginning of the possibility of miracles, of intervention, the potential to perceive divine intervention. Look, divine intervention is happening. It's real. It's not like you need to go and get it. It's about seeing how it's already present in our lives. You know, like I, like this young man who I'm talking to, who is quite dissatisfied with his overall state of mind, and you know, just is convinced that there's something he's not doing right because of his background dissatisfaction, this background feeling of, you know, insecure, etc. When I ask him, tell me, is it static? Like, are you always at the same, you know, level of bother about it? Or, you know, would you say there are times where you're happy and, you know, and times where you're not? And he's like, no, I'm definitely, there are definitely times where I feel more carefree and happy, and times where I feel more troubled and bothered. And yet, but then he says, but during my happier times, I still know, in the back of my mind, I know that I'm, it's not going to last. Like, it's, at some point, it's going to revert to the, you know, the dissatisfaction, the feeling of there's something wrong. And so he's, you know, he's a little bit more focused on that. Like, he's not so appreciative of there being, he doesn't know what accounts for it. Like, he openly acknowledges, I'm not sure why that feeling drops to a, like a level 2 intensity, and then why it jumps up again at a later point to an 8 or 9 intensity. I don't really know what does that. But I can just, but I'm more bothered by the fact that it's always there, even if it's a level 2. So, you know, that's a habit that he has of being more bothered by the level 2 than appreciative of there being something in play. To me, the story of this Purim miracle and the story of Adar is that we can tune into these gifts of divine intervention, the presence of the divine in our lives that is reliable, it's real, it's pointing to something bigger than just our shift in mood. It's pointing to a deeper truth that encompasses all moods, that encompasses all feelings, and that allows us to kind of take our eyes off of how, what's my mood level, what's... Mood levels are interesting data, but they're not significant in and of themselves as a focal point. They're not something to get fixated on. They're simply an opportunity to notice that there's something deeper that encompasses all moods. And to me, that's the opportunity of these miraculous days, that we have a sensitivity, an opportunity to sense that divine intervention that points to a deeper truth. So we will call it a morning here, and I want to thank you for a beautiful week. I want to remind everyone that I sent out a message that my website name is no longer, it still works, jewishcenterforwellbeing.com, but I shortened it to jewishwellbeing.org. So in general, it's still forwarding, but some people have described there being some difficulty. So I'm just letting you know that is the active main name, jewishwellbeing.org. And I wish everyone a wonderful week.